This is Forrest Solis talking about my birth story for the Creative Push Project on June 22nd, 2015 at
12:10.
Okay. So, like all birth stories, they started with the conception, which was a challenge. I had thought I would get pregnant immediately. I don't know why I spent 32 years trying, well, not really 32. Let's see, when? 20 years at least trying not to get pregnant. And then I'd miss a pill and I'd think, oh my God, I'm pregnant, you know, and then I actively was trying to get pregnant, you know, having as much sex with my husband as I possibly could, you know, and nothing for months after month after month, you know. So it was about 6 months in, and at that point, my mother, who really wanted a grandchild, was nagging at me, you know, are you pregnant yet? Are you pregnant yet? And then she would say, maybe it's time to get tested, you know? And so that was kind of planted the seed that something was wrong and put like a lot of stress onto the scenario, you know, of trying to get pregnant. So anyhow, eventually I did conceive, and I remember it was about 3 a.m. and I had taken the pregnancy test and it said pregnant. And so I crawled into bed with my husband and I said, we're pregnant. And I remember just beaming the rest of the morning, you know, until I had to get up. Just so excited, just absolutely excited. And I look over at him and he'd have this like petrified, stricken look on his face, you know, like, oh my God, this is really happening, which is really comical. So the pregnancy started almost immediately. I started gaining weight. It was like every time I get on the scale, I'd be 3 pounds heavier, like per day, 3 pounds heavier, until I ultimately gained, like, I would say over 50 pounds, at least 50 pounds. And it was summertime. It was so hot in Arizona. You know, it's like 115 degrees. And I'm just like waddling around and I'd float in the pool. And I was like, I'm white, fair skinned. And I just looked like this marshmallow floating on top of the water with these like enormous breasts and this enormous thighs and butt. And everything just got so big. It's like I did not even recognize myself, you know. And so then I had noticed, I was taking hypnobirthing classes, and I thought I should be doing something to educate myself, you know, about this process and how to make it through the delivery, because I wanted to have a natural birth, you know, whatever that means. I wanted to not have an epidural, because my mother did. She had four children naturally, and she was like a baby machine. So I thought, oh yeah, I can do this, right? So the hypnobirthing classes would come around, and my hypnobirthing instructor was like really sweet, beautiful woman, and I could just tell this was not working for me. I couldn't focus. I wasn't self-hypnotizing at all. I was just obsessing about my stomach would be growling when I'd be laying down, or I'd have some sensation, a hair tickling my face, or something that would keep me like in reality, you know, and I couldn't get past that. My husband, on the other hand, would fall asleep like immediately after trying to self-hypnotize. But so I felt like I was almost continuing the course for her benefit, because she was so sweet. I couldn't just tell her this is not working. So I noticed when I would be standing in the bathroom, brushing my teeth or doing something like that, that a little puddle of water would be on the ground, you know, like just a couple inches in diameter, like a tablespoon, let's say. And I was feeling like it was my water breaking, you know, but it wasn't really breaking the way everyone says. It wasn't this giant gush, you know, so I just didn't know what that was. So I called the doctor and he said, go to the hospital. And at this point, I'm pretty much due. Like it's around my due date. So I'm thinking that's what it is. So I go to the hospital and they swab for amniotic fluid. And they said, no, it's not amniotic fluid. You must be peeing yourself. I mean, literally, that's what they said. And I said, no, I know I'm not peeing myself. Like, I know I'm like almost, I'm 9 months pregnant, but I'm sure that I'm not urinating on myself. And so she said, well, I don't know. It is what it is. It's not amniotic fluid. So you can go ahead and go home. So I felt like really dismissed. And so I went home, and then it was like days rolling by of this kind of consistent water leakage. So I call the doctor again. And they say, go to the hospital. So I go to the hospital and I go through the exact same routine, except finally they said, yes, it's amniotic fluid. And then they said, when did this leaking start? And I said, well, like about three or four days ago. And they said, okay, now you're going to be like rushed into induction because at this point they're worried about infection. So my mother was there, Eric was there, and we were ready to go. And so they brought me to this room, and I was friends with the head nurse, and so I think I got a really good room. It was this gigantic room. And, you know, big bed right in the center. Not a big, big bed, but a nice size hospital bed, not like a twin, in the center. And my husband was there and my mother, and I was given Pitocin. So that was started the whole process. So I never had one natural contraction ever. It was all chemically induced labor. And with Pitocin, the contractions are far more intense and kind of not spaced out, and they don't really build on each other the way you naturally would, you know, where you'd be at home and you'd be like, oh, I'm feeling some tightening. And then, you know, however longer after that, you feel more tightening, and then it would get a little closer together and they'd be more intense. It wasn't like that. It was just like instantaneously, once that Pitocin hit, intense, like labor. And so I would be standing and like swaying. My husband would be behind me, like with his hands on my hips. And the baby monitor, because I, of course, monitors all over me. So, you know, and they were monitoring my contractions and heart rate and things like that. The monitor would be right there, and you could see on the monitor when there would be a contraction and the strength of the contraction, which was interesting. And I found that the only way I could tolerate it was if I was standing. And then I was like, well, you know, I could try that, you know, what do they call those, like laboring balls or birthing balls or something, where you kind of like sit on a bouncy ball. And so I tried that, and it was like, no, this did not work out. So then immediately the nurse comes in and says, oh, the baby's not happy, so you need to lay down. And then I laid down, and it was like the end. I mean, I was writhing in pain. I could not lay down, you know, but they wanted me to lay down because of the baby's heart rate or whatever it was. And I was like, could I just stand up again? That would feel better. And they were like, no. So I'm laying down, and I'm like not handling it. I mean, I'm not going inward. I'm not feeling like I'm in any sort of control. It's like I'm so hyper aware of the agony. Everything is tense. And my mother, the nurse, came in and said, we're about to go to lunch. So, you know, I'll see you and whatever. And mother said, before you go to lunch, could you just check her dilation? So she checked, and I was at like 4 centimeters. So it was terrible. And at that point, mother looks at me and looks at her and says, why don't we just go ahead and do an epidural? And I was like, okay. I was just, forget it, throw in the towel. You know, I was hoping to at least make it to 7 centimeters or something, but 4, okay. So then we schedule the epidural, and the epidural guy comes in. I think all people have to be out of the room. So husband was out, mother was out. It was just me and the doctor. And I was, the whole time I'd been like terrified of this process of the epidural. That was the only reason I wanted to do natural delivery, was just to not get an epidural. The idea of like a long needle going in my back, and possibly, you know, you hear horror stories of like, you know, losing all feeling in the lower part of your body for the rest of your life, for instance, or I don't know, many terrible things, or like chronic pain after this. So I had no idea what to expect. So I'm having these rolling, horrible contractions, and I have to lean forward, of course, and he's behind me, and he's putting iodine or whatever it is. They couldn't do iodine on me. It was something else. And then he inserts the needle in between. You're supposed to just stay still, right? So control all of your body and not tense up and not, you know, jerk or anything like that. And so he does it. Everything's fine with that. And immediately it was like relief. I mean, just total relief. I can't even tell you. So at that point, I'm on the bed and I'm comfortable. And mom and my husband go to sleep, and they kind of take a nap. And the next thing I know, the nurse comes in to check me again, and I was like 9 centimeters, almost 10, almost fully dilated, which was excellent. So it happened pretty quickly. I think that I was finally able to relax. And then, of course, they probably just cranked up the Pitocin, because why not, to speed things along. So it went at that point, I felt pretty quickly. And I was really glad my mother was there, because at certain points on the bed, my water had finally broken, and it would just be like sitting in water, you know. And so she would be like, lift up your hips and like pull this kind of like diaper pad they have you sitting on out from under you, and then put a fresh one down. And it was just so nice to have someone doing that. So the nurses weren't coming in and doing that. I had my mother there to kind of take care of that stuff, and I wasn't being humiliated or, you know, having strangers deal with me in very intimate ways. So let's see. after the epidural, they put the catheter in. So at this point, I had a monitor strapped to my belly. I had an IV. I had an epidural. I had a catheter. And then they put a fetal monitor attached to the baby's head. So I had like six tubes going in and out of my body from various places. And my husband was like, seriously, it was like a scene from Alien. I mean, there were at least four tubes going in your vagina and then multiple tubes all around you and then like beeping monitors around you. It was very strange. So let's see. After I fully dilated, it was time to push. And the nurse came in and like walked me through the kind of the labor process for a while until I was like really close to delivering. And then the doctor came in. So while she was there, she would, you know, count to 10, and then I'd have to push, or she'd push through the counting. I don't remember at this point, but her voice was really saccharine. It was like this really sweet, quiet voice, and it was like 1, 2, 3, 4, and I just wanted to murder her. I mean, really bad, like at least bite her, like a good, solid bite, you know? I was a biting baby, though, so, you know, the urge is still there, I guess, but... So she did that until I got far enough along, and then the doctor came in, and Eric was holding one leg, and my mother was holding the other leg, and so they were really, it was really great in terms of that. It was great, and the doctor was in between my legs, of course, and he was, this is actually a funny story, because when I was going through my prenatal doctor visits, I had chosen this doctor originally, because he was one of the top doctors in our area, and then... I met with him a few times, and I really didn't like his bedside manner because he was really all business, and it didn't put me at ease or make me feel comfortable or anything, and I was confused most of the time because he would just like write stuff in the chart and not tell me what was going on. So I switched, and I felt bad, but it was like, whatever. And so I switched to another doctor who was super soothing voice. He had a bunch of kids. He was a great, just seemed like a guy that would really put me at ease. So then... the day of my delivery, my doctor is out of town. So guess who delivers my baby? The doctor that I, you know, changed, that I did not want to be my doctor. And he knew totally, you know, when your patients change to another doctor in your practice. And so he comes into the delivery and I'm like, oh my God, this is so bad. But you're in such another headspace, you're like, whatever. And so, but he was exactly the personality I needed. I didn't need to be soothed. I needed to be like yelled at. I needed this baby out of me, you know? So he was like, push, you know, he'd be like screaming, push, push. It was really funny, but it was just perfect. Cause it was like, okay, you really bear down, really push. You needed that. You didn't need someone like whispering to you. So I'd push, and my mother, and I was like, is it anything happening? You know, cause I couldn't feel it. And you know, I could feel some sort of cramping, but I couldn't tell that muscles were contracting. I couldn't tell there was a baby's head emerging or anything, you know? And I said, is anything going on? And my mom was like, well, yeah, you know, the head's like pushing out, but then it goes right back in as soon as you stop pushing. And that happened for a while. I don't know exactly how long, but it happened a while. And then the doctor said, can we do an episiotomy? He was like, we need to do an episiotomy. He's like, yes, do it. So he cut me, and episiotomy is when they can cut you in various ways, but they're cutting you at the lower part of your vagina to extend your vagina, basically. So they can cut you from your vagina to your butthole or to the left or right of your vagina, any of those. So with me, I think they just went straight down, and they didn't go all the way, but it was like a good, I would say, I don't know, an inch or so, you know? And as soon as they did, the baby emerged. Like, it just needed that. So I was fine with that. And so the baby comes out, and they pull him up, and this, you know, he's like a bloody mess, and he has this thick umbilical cord, and I'll never forget, the umbilical cord was like gigantic. It just seemed like if you were to hold your index finger and your thumb together, that thick, and it was like two cords, you know, two ropes, let's see, wrapped around each other, and one was red and one was blue, it looked like. It was just really amazing looking. And they asked Eric if he wanted to cut it, and of course he did. And so, you know, they clamped it off, and he cut it. And I remember him saying, my God, this is so hard to cut. It was just like cutting through rubber, you know. So then, so they put the baby on my chest, and I'm holding the baby, and Eric is standing to my right, and he's weeping, and my mother's to my left with a video camera. And the doctor is between my legs, he's sewing me up. And so with each you know, there's this bright, bright, bright light there where, because of course he needs to see, and it's kind of dimly lit room. So it's a super bright light on my vagina, okay, really bright. And he's really lit up from this kind of reflective light. And he has this needle and thread, and he's threading it, threading the needle, and he brings the needle way up high into the air, like at least a foot and a half. And then he dives it back down, and then he brings it way up high, then he dives it back down. And I'll never forget that. It was just so surreal. Like, I'm having this intimate moment, you know, with my immediate family and my new baby. And then I look over it, and here's this man, like, completely at work with, like, no sense of what's happening above my vagina. He's just all about that and, like, sewing it up. And so I'm assuming he did a good job. They take the baby. Of course, there's this whole part after when you have an epidural where you're, like, gaining feeling in your lower parts again. And at that point, I felt like that happened really fast because I think that it probably – they turned off the epidural when I was pushing. So they took the baby, and they were weighing him and doing various things to him. And Eric was over there. My mother was over there. And so I decide I'm going to get up and walk over there. So I walk over there, and I'm looking at the baby. His name's August. And – the nurse comes and she goes, oh, you're bleeding. Like that, like, oh, you're bleeding, you know. I'm like, oh, you cut yourself, you know, just very casual about it. And I turn around and it's like, oh, yeah, I am. Like someone had taken a bucket of blood and like just splashed it onto the floor between the bed to where I was standing, which was like 5 yards. You know, it was a big room. And they must have just been like from the episiotomy and then maybe residual stuff. I don't know. But there was plenty of blood there. And I just thought, How can this be normal? You know, how can you lose all this blood and go through all of this and still be walking around? And it just didn't seem right. So at that point, they probably made me lay down or whatever and for a little while. And then I remember them bathing August, and he had this full head of like thick chestnut colored hair. I mean, you could have braided it. It was so thick and spiky. It was adorable. And she was washing his hair, and it was just, that was really sweet. So we changed rooms, and I was able to, they kept me there for about 4 days. There was some issue with like concern over a possible infection or something about our blood types were different enough. Like Eric's and mine were opposite. I don't know. His was positive. Mine was negative, and I don't know. So they kept us there for about 4 days, but it wasn't a problem because I was really able to just recover. And it was just this little room, and my mother had like a little blow-up twin bed or something, and she slept there much of the time. And it was just August and me, and people brought me food, and there was a little shower and a little bathroom right there. And he never really left the room, so he was able to sleep. I let him sleep in the bed with me. They didn't love that, but to this day, that is an issue, honestly, though. It started back then. So he slept in bed with me. It was really this wonderful, intimate time without having to, like, deal with being in my own house and like our dogs and just the day-to-day stuff that you feel like, you know, you're dealing with when you're in your house. So that happened. We stayed there for the 4 days and then we went home. And as soon as I got home, you know, it was chaos, like just figuring out how to be a mother. August was a really challenging baby. He just constantly cried. And just was never happy, it seemed like. And he didn't have colic. Nothing was wrong with him. We took him to see the pediatrician. They said, oh, yeah, he's a fussy baby. Like, that's the diagnosis. He's a fussy baby. So, and mother was like, no, babies don't act like this. Like, something, your baby is super fussy. Like, so she, and she had 4 children. So I knew that something was, this is extra different. And so one thing I was not prepared for, you know, besides the fussiness, like, you can get through it. You know, this is your job. But I just felt, like, utterly enslaved. I just felt enslaved when I got home. You know, he really could only ever sleep in my arms. He just wasn't happy when he wasn't in my arms. I don't know. And Eric, my husband, got to, like, shower and go to the bathroom and come and go as he pleased without having to consult with me before he did those things. But I constantly was like, could you hold August while I shower? And then I had to be in the shower and hear him crying, like, the entire time. Or, you know, could you hold him while I go to the bathroom? And then, again, I'd be trying to go to the bathroom. He'd be crying. And it was just really hard. And I grew to really resent Eric at this time. But now I love him. We're still together, so that's good. And it's been a few years. But yeah, it just felt like, you know, I don't know, because we had talked about having equal roles and he was going to, you know, I could pump and he would try to feed him, or maybe I would hold him when I was feeding him, but then he would take turns and stuff. But it really just felt like the entire burden was on me. And of course I loved him. I was very excited, but I did feel very much enslaved. You know, I didn't feel like my own person. I felt more of my own person when I was growing another person inside me than I did when he finally came out. So I remember one time mother was like, you've got to get out of the house. And so we went to a store and I called Eric to say, how is he doing? And I could hear him crying in the background. And I cried the entire way home from the store. Like, we can't be here. I need to just be home. But that being said, it's been about 4 years and he's a wonderful kid, you know, strong, funny, has really developed a personality. And so we've gotten over those difficult times. And, you know, it's definitely made me a stronger person, but I will never have another kid. I think I'm gonna leave it there.